Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Styles McKenzie helping you make those rooms sing. Today's style tip. When it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild, like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Fierce. This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair has got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
You're listening to live courtroom coverage of the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. Now, back to the courtroom.
Now, when you were looking at this bullet hole and then you came back, prior to leaving, did you ask Brandon about that glass that was next to the vehicle?
I did. I thought maybe he took the glass out and put it on the ground. And he said, no. What occurred was, as he pulled into his driveway after the incident occurred and he knew that the other vehicle was gone, he pulled into his driveway. Well, the Teslas, I guess as soon as he puts his car into park, his driver's door automatically opens. And that's when he said that, as you can see on the, what would be, I guess, the right-hand side is when, yes, the actual window, the passenger, the driver's window just fell out onto the driveway there.
Did you actually ask him if he had moved it to make sure it was where it was, where it landed?
Yes, I made sure he didn't touch it, and I asked him that.
Okay, so did he indicate he had not touched it or moved it?
No, it was where it fell out of his car is where it laid.
Okay. When you first contacted Brandon initially in the street to the time when you showed him the bullet hole and came back, can you tell us his demeanor over that time span from when you first contacted him to after you made that call and came back and had contact with him?
He was kind of bewildered. He didn't know what exactly happened. He was very quiet and concerned and didn't know how to react on this because he had no idea what in the world happened. You know, this car, this something, the window falls out of the car when he opens the door, and he's like, he's just kind of bewildered on like what in the world took place just a few minutes ago.
When you came back after you had showed him the bullet hole, went and made the call and returned, did you see a change in his demeanor?
Yes, I did.
What did you note then?
Well, I noticed when I showed him the bullet hole and all, he's like, first of all, he said, well, that definitely isn't a BB gun. And I explained, no, it's not. He then says, I need to sit down, because I was asking him some more questions. He goes, I just need a minute. I just need to sit down. I asked him if he wanted a chair. He says, no, I just need a minute. So I just had him sit down right there in the driveway area and just let him gather himself for a few minutes.
Did you notice anything with his hands?
He was quite shaken.
So you saw his hands physically shaking?
Yes.
At some point, did you ask Brandon to give you a description of the vehicle that he said shot at him?
Yes, I did.
What did he give you in terms of a description?
It was the description was a green, a kind of a darkish green Jeep Wrangler. And he said that as he was driving westbound on his street, Phelps, the back window of this Jeep just kind of flew open, and he noticed that there was a muzzle of some type of weapon that was pointing out at his vehicle. He thought maybe there was a silencer, but there was a very loud bang. From that next, after that happened, his window shattered and he just got scared. So he just took off and went around the block, went westbound and around the block. Where this all took place is he said that this green Jeep Wrangler was parked westbound. And if we could see that, it was on, that would be kind of the south side. It was parked on his side of the street. And it was pretty much face to face with that white minivan. So it was basically parked the wrong way on the roadway. And that's where it was parked there. It was pretty much, he said, it was right up against the minivan. And that's when he saw the back window pop open, and that's when that gun pointed at him, and he heard a very loud bang, saw his window shatter, and then he, like I said, he just kept going westbound to the next street over, made a turn northbound on that street, and basically stopped, because he just, and called 911 and got 911 on, you know, they were talking 911.
Let me ask you a little bit about, did he tell you this Jeep Wrangler, if it was a two or four door?
It was a two door.
Did he tell you anything about the license plate on the vehicle?
Yes, the license plate was, it was a, he didn't have the numbers, but it definitely was a Texas license plate.
When he talked about the type of gun that came out, did he tell you if he thought it was a handgun or a rifle?
It had a long barrel, so he said it was, he was believing it was a rifle.
Okay. So he talked to you about the Jeep being right in this area in front of this white vehicle we see in Exhibit 14?
Yes, that is correct.
Did he also sort of present to you approximately where he was when he sees this window open and the rifle barrel appear?
If you see the cones right here, I believe detectives must have put them on right where that first cone exactly. That's where he started making that left into, he started going into his driveway. And that is when the shot occurred.
Okay. And then he continued straight?
He did. He just kept going straight because he had no idea what was happening. So he just got out of the area and headed west on Phelps.
Now, Detective, you told us, obviously, you've been a law enforcement officer, or I'm sorry, officer, retired officer, for more than 30 years. Have you fired a rifle?
Yes, numerous times. I'm an avid hunter.
When you fire a single shot from a rifle, will a casing always eject?
No, it depends on what rifle you're shooting. If you have a bolt-action rifle, if you shoot, it's good. You need to manually open up the bolt. The casing will go out, will eject, and then you would put another bolt, or you'd close the bolt and put another round in your gun. If it's a semi-automatic rifle, then yes, as soon as you shoot, the casing will pop out and another bullet will go into the chamber.
Based upon what Brandon had told you, that he only saw the end of the barrel come out the back window, did you expect to find a casing around here?
No, not at all.
Why not?
Well, it's a Jeep, and I also have a Jeep Wrangler myself, but if the barrel is just kind of right out by the end of the Jeep where the window goes up, the rest of the rifle's inside the Jeep. So wherever that person is, whether it's in the driver's seat, well, if it's two doors, it's got to be the driver's seat, passenger seat area. As soon as the rifle is fired, the bullet comes out, it's going to be right inside the Jeep. It's not going to go out the back end because it's a long rifle. So the casing, if it was a semi-auto, it's going to have fallen right there somewhere, the driver's seat, or maybe in between the passenger seat in that area.
Did you in fact tell the other officers and sergeants that arrived at the scene that you didn't expect to find a casing because of that reason?
That is correct, yes.
You told us that you have a Jeep Wrangler yourself.
Yes.
In order to open that back window, do you have to remove the rear tire if you want to just open the window?
Yes. I mean, even if you didn't have a rear tire, you got to open up the tailgate. The tailgate comes first, then the window would pop up.
Okay. So if there's a tire on it and you want to open just the window, it would hit the tire.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. As you are collecting this information, did you call to have detectives come to arrive at the scene?
Yes, I went back in my patrol car, contacted my sergeant, advised him what I had, and the detectives were dispatched out to the scene.
Now, while you were sort of the person who was having contact with Brandon, and you're observing him having to sit down and shaking, did you talk to him about whether or not he needed someone to come be there with him?
Yes, I asked him if he needed a bottle of water. I asked him if there was maybe a family member or a friend that could be with him during this investigation.
And did, at some point during the time you were here, did a couple of his friends show up?
Yes, they did.
Okay. As this investigation was going on, once you realized this was really a bullet hole, we see some yellow tape here. What is that?
That is crime scene tape. At the time, we knew that we now have a crime scene. So what we'll do is put the tape in the area that we feel that is part of the actual crime scene. So no other, whether they're officers, the public, or anybody, cannot come into that area. And it's an area that detectives and officers can search without it being contaminated by people coming in, going in that area.
In fact, did one of Brandon's friends sort of arrive while he was initially here, and he was kind of asked to move back away from the scene some?
That is correct, yes.
And so we can see here the yellow tape is sort of behind where you have explained the Jeep was located, according to Brandon?
Yes.
Now, did you have a couple different contacts with Brandon as you were gathering information and sort of going back to your car and making some calls?
Yes, I had contact with him in front of his home, and also when we had him and his friends go across the street and sit on the grass in the neighbor's house.
Before he went across the street to sit, did you try to, or did you talk to Brandon about who he thought might have been responsible for this?
Yeah, I asked him if he had any enemies that would be doing this.
And so because of the way that he talked to you about this, where a Jeep is parked there and he arrives and the door comes open and a barrel of a rifle comes out, were you trying to determine who might be the person doing that?
That is correct, yes.
Did Brandon tell you that the only thing he could think of was his soon-to-be ex-wife's family?
Yes, he did.
Did he tell you that he thought this might be in relation to an incident that occurred in Chandler?
Yes, he did.
Did he provide you the names of people who were involved in that incident that he thought might be involved in his shooting?
Yes, he did. He said Lori Vallow and Alex Cox.
During your conversation later with Brandon, did he provide you information that Lori Vallow and her husband at the time, Charles Vallow, had previously lived in Texas?
Yes, she did.
Was that significant to you given the fact he told you the Jeep had Texas plates?
Exactly. If these folks are from Texas, Texas plates, it's a good possibility two and two together that possibly could be the suspect.
Was that all things that you were passing along to the sergeants for them to brief to the detectives?
That is correct, yes.
Did you talk to Brandon about when he had moved into this residence, how long he'd been here?
Yes, I did.
And did he advise you that he, well, let me ask you, this was October 2nd was a Wednesday, yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Did he tell you he had just moved in the prior Wednesday?
That is correct. He's moving in Wednesday, Thursday area, yes, of last week, the week before.
So the Wednesday and Thursday he had moved, been physically moving into this house?
That is correct, yes.
Did you go through Brandon's morning routine on that day, October 2nd?
Yes, I did.
And did he talk to you about his timeline of leaving at 7:25 to take his kids to school?
Yes.
Did he tell you about dropping off his youngest with his soon-to-be ex-wife?
Yes, he did.
Now, and did you again relay all of that to the sergeants to be briefed to the detectives?
That is correct, yes.
Were you taking notes of that as you were speaking with him?
Yes, from the minute I started until I left the scene, I was taking notes.
Were you also wearing a body cam?
Yes, I was.
So was that also recording that?
Yes.
You told us that at some point, Brandon and his friends moved across the street to sort of get out of the scene?
Yes, that's correct.
And were they sort of sitting under a tree in some shade?
Yes.
Did you at some point talk to the neighbor whose, I guess, yard y'all were sitting in?
Yes, I did.
Did you look for and ask for any cameras at her house?
Yes.
Did you find any?
No, there were no cameras.
And did you just remain with Brandon Boudreaux and his friends until detectives came to meet and interview with him?
Yes, I did.
State has no other questions.
Cross.
Officer Rob, is it okay if I call you that since you're retired?
That is fine. Okay.
Officer Rob, When you had stated that you saw a gentleman standing in the street, is that correct?
That is correct.
How far in the street was Brandon when you pulled up?
From the sidewalk?
Yeah.
Maybe 2-3 feet, maybe.
Okay. So closer to the driveway side?
I would assume so, yes. I'd say maybe a couple feet east of the driveway and about maybe 2 or 3 feet into the street.
Okay. And then where did you park when you drove up?
Across the street.
And then did you talk to Brandon in the street? Did you guys go into the driveway? What happened at that point?
I started talking to him because he was still on the phone. He was in the street, and I had him walk onto the sidewalk, which was a lot safer than being in the street, and tell me what was happening.
Okay, so you said he was on the phone when you came up?
Yes.
So he ended that call and then moved, or he was on the phone still when he moved to the driveway?
When I arrived, I believe he was talking to our 911 dispatch. When I arrived and told him what was happening, he hung up with the dispatch.
Okay. And then how long did you talk before you went over to look at the Tesla?
I couldn't give you maybe 4 or 5 minutes or so.
Okay. And then when you looked at the Tesla and you put your pen in the Tesla and kind of wiggled it around, were you looking for the projectile in there?
I was looking for the projectile, and I was looking for the trajectory of how that bullet went in so I could figure out where in the vehicle it might, if it did exit, where it could have exited.
Like to see if the hole went through, possibly, into the car?
No, I'm just looking to see which way the bullet was going in the car, so if we can find it, where in the vehicle it could have been.
Okay. So did you, is that kind of a typical thing that you stick your pin in there to find trajectory?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And you didn't think that could do anything to dislodge any of the projectiles or anything like that?
No, ma'am.
And did you find any large projectiles within that hole?
I did not.
And you didn't find any of the projectiles, is that correct? You didn't extract them out of there?
That's correct. No, I did not.
Someone did that later?
I don't know.
Okay. And so did you figure out the trajectory with your pen?
I could see which way it went into the vehicle.
And which way was that?
I believe it went up. I don't have the picture in front of me, so I don't know. It's kind of hard to try to explain. But where the driver would have been and his head would have been right here. The projectile or the bullet hole was approximately maybe 1.5 to 2 inches above where Brandon's head would have been in the driver's seat. And it went up, and it would have been kind of an upward motion into the frame of the car.
An upward motion.
Kind of going up like this.
Okay. And how big was that actual hole that you viewed with your eyes?
I did not measure it, but it was definitely a rifle round.
Okay. So in your experience with rifles, how big would the rifle bullet be to have to make that size of a hole? Like a typical rifle bullet or something bigger? I don't know much about bullets.
if you want me to guess, I would say maybe a 30-06.
Okay. And so did you give these trajectory points to when you were briefing the detectives when they got there, what you thought the trajectory was?
I did not, because they could easily see what was where the trajectory was. I let them make their determination.
And then did you look for, I know that you had asked him, you said you had asked him to open up the back seat, is that correct? The back door?
Yes.
To the back seat? And what did you find inside the back seat? Anything?
No.
How about glass?
Which glass? In the back seat or in the back of the back door, you mean?
Yeah.
No, it was fully intact.
Well, I mean, just was there any glass in the back seat of the car?
No.
So was there glass in the front seat of the car?
I don't recall that. I don't remember.
And there was some glass on the flooring?
There was glass on the outside. I couldn't tell you what if there was anything inside the vehicle. I don't recall that.
Okay. And Brandon had told you or had conveyed to you that the window had fallen out when the door opened. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And it had not been moved at all?
It has not.
And did you move it at all?
I did not.
Did you see any of the detectives move it?
I did not.
Was it basically intact and just shattered to your view?
It looked like it. I didn't see a bunch of little pieces. It looked like it was what would be a sun, what is that, a tint? And how it shatters and it just stays in one big piece and it's just on the ground right up there in the driveway.
Okay. And in that glass, did you see a bullet hole at all?
I didn't touch the glass.
Just looking, did you see a hole where like the bullet had gone through the glass?
No, I did not.
Okay. And you never found any kind of part of the projectile or saw an exit for the projectile anywhere in the vehicle?
That is correct.
So it looked like it stopped inside the frame. Is that what you were assessing?
Possibility, yes.
Okay. And you had said before that Brandon had thought it might be a BB gun. He'd indicated that to you?
He did.
And did he indicate to you about seeing a little boy outside?
Nothing like that, no.
Okay. Or that it was possibly a paintball gun?
They made a comment, yes.
And then you had stated that you put a flashlight in there to see if there was an exit. Is that correct?
I'll see if I saw anything inside a projectile or anything in that hole. I did.
And you didn't see any kind of exit hole with the flashlight?
That's correct.
Okay. You had stated that when Brandon's first friend showed up, that he was inside the crime scene tape. Is that correct?
Don't believe the crime scene tape was put up quite yet.
Okay. But he was walking right by the vehicle, by the Tesla. Is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
Okay. And then are you aware that there was one piece of glass found in the street?
I could not tell you that. I don't know.
So if Brandon and his friends were walking around in that before the crime scene tape was put up, it could possibly have been kicked or moved by a shoe.
A possibility.
Yeah. Did Brandon go from where the Tesla was to back to the street and back and forth? Or?
I don't believe so. I think he pretty much stayed on that sidewalk.
Okay.
I remember.
But initially he was standing in the street.
That is correct.
Did you think that was odd since someone just shot at him, that he would be standing out in the middle of the street where someone could come back around the bend?
Object to speculation.
Sustain.
You had stated that Brandon had conveyed to you that he had no idea what had happened. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And so he was bewildered. Is that what word you used?
Yes.
Okay. And that he had described the vehicle that had shot at him as a darkish green Jeep Wrangler.
That is correct.
And so did he not say puke green to you?
I can't recall if he said puke green.
And then did he go and get his phone and show you a color of a green and said camo green?
That is correct.
Okay. So he actually showed you a picture of the green color.
He didn't show me. He was looking at his phone, and there was another officer, Officer Bullock, myself, we're looking at, and that's the color that he was looking at, and he said camo green.
Okay. So, but you saw the picture of the camo green that he was showing to Officer Bullock?
I don't believe so, no.
But you heard him say the word camel green?
That is correct.
Okay. And then you said something about that he saw a silencer but heard a loud bang.
That is correct, yes.
Okay. If there was a silencer, would there be a loud bang?
Couldn't tell you. I don't know if silencer on a rifle. I have no idea. I've never heard a silencer on a rifle, so I can't answer that.
In all your shooting experience, you've never used one or had known anything about them?
Not a silencer. I know a silencer on a handgun, but not on a rifle. So I don't know how loud or how quiet it would be.
Okay. And so if you're inside a car, like a nice car, right, like a Tesla, and all the windows are shut, the doors are shut, maybe you have the radio on, you might not even hear a loud bang. I mean, if there was a silencer, you might not even hear a loud bang at all. Wouldn't that be true?
Again, to speculation, since she's already indicated she doesn't
know.
Hold on.
She testified she hasn't experienced a silencer on a rifle, so the objection is sustained.
In your estimation of looking at the crime scene, because you were first on the scene, is that correct?
Yes.
That how far away would the back of the Jeep have been to where the shot occurred when Brandon was turning into the driveway, in your estimation?
I did not. And an estimate, maybe 10 feet.
Okay. So would it be hard? Someone has shot rifles, right? Hard to hit your target at 10 feet away? With a rifle?
No, I don't think so.
And you had stated that you didn't think that there would be a casing anywhere on the ground, but they did canvas for a casing anyway, isn't that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And were you part of the side-by-side walking down the road looking for any kind of projectile or casings that went around the block?
No.
Okay. Those 11 other officers?
I don't know how many. There were officers, but I couldn't tell you how many.
But you did not participate in that?
That is correct.
Okay. Were you gone by that point, or you were still there working the scene?
I don't know what time they started that, so I couldn't tell you that.
Did you see them doing that?
I did not in front of the house. No, I did not.
So you didn't witness any of those people walking the whole block to search for things?
That's correct. I did not.
Okay. So it could have been done after possibly you left the scene?
Yes.
Okay. About how long do you think that you were there at the scene?
I couldn't tell you. I'd have to look at my notes. Got to be at least an hour, maybe two.
Okay. And what was your role after you spoke to Brandon, briefed the detectives, then what were you doing?
I just stood on the grassy area on the other side of the road where Brandon and his two friends were sitting on the grass.
And you had mentioned something about, did you talk to some neighbors? Is that correct?
There was a neighbor that came out of her door, and she was standing at her front entrance to her house.
And you spoke with her?
I did.
And did you come back and follow up with any of the neighbors?
Not with not just her, not with any other neighbors.
Did you go follow up with her?
No, I did not.
Okay. And you stated, so when you were speaking to Brandon initially, when did he call his friends to come over?
It was after I went back into my patrol car, came back out, maybe 10 minutes later or so. I assume he was on the phone and contacted him at that time.
Okay. And did you discuss that with him, like, go ahead and call your friends or call someone to come be with you?
No, I told him, do you need me to call someone for you to be with you?
Okay. And he decided to do that himself?
I assume so, yes.
Okay. You had stated something about that he was at the front of the house. So before he was under the tree, he was sitting at the front of the house? Is that correct?
When I initially arrived?
No, after you spoke to him for the first few minutes.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, and did you enter the house at all?
I did not.
Did you enter the garage at all?
No.
And in your notes, did you write a report?
I did.
Is the neighbor that you spoke to Samantha Babock?
Can I look at my report to refresh my memory? Because I couldn't tell you right off.
Sure.
She has it.
She has it. Oh, sorry. She's just going to look at it, right?
Can you ask that question again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, is the neighbor that you talked to is named Samantha Babock?
Raybuck, yes.
Oh, Raybuck. Okay, I must have that wrong. And did she convey to you...
Object to hearsay.
Sounds like that's where it was going. Sustained.
Did you learn that someone in the neighborhood thought there was a dark blue Jeep?
Again to hearsay.
Sustained.
Did she give you any relevant information that was used in your investigation?
She really didn't give me really any information on that. I'm sorry, I don't understand your question.
Did you use any of the relevant, any information that you received from Samantha Raybuck in your investigation?
I gave that information to the detective.
And would that be Detective Pillar?
I don't remember which. There was a lot of detectives. I don't remember exactly who I spoke with to give that information to.
Okay. And Detective Pillar is the case agent, is that correct?
That is correct, yes.
And so is that kind of who you report to, though? If there's anything going on, you kind of go to the case agent?
I would, yes.
And so have you spoken to Detective Pillar about this case since October 2nd, 2019?
No.
So he's never asked you any follow-up questions or anything about the case?
No.
So in your report, you wrote your report and just handed it over, and that was that?
It submitted it, and that was it. Yes, correct.
Okay. And in your report, do you remember reporting that it was like pukey green?
I would have to get a recollection. I'm not sure about that.
So you're refreshing your memory by looking at your report?
Yes, sir. I do see green. I don't believe it's pukey green.
I thought that was funny. Okay, so no one that you spoke to, Officer Rob, other than Brandon, heard a loud bang. Is that correct?
I object to hearsay.
I'll sustain. You can rephrase that.
The only witness you have that heard a loud bang was Brandon, is that correct?
That is correct.
And Brandon also stated that he thought there was a silencer on the gun. Is that correct?
He did. He said there was something in the front that he believed was a silencer.
Okay. No more questions, Your Honor.
All right. Redirect.
When you were talking to Brandon, he was talking about thinking it was maybe a BB gun. Was he indicating that he thought this because that nothing came into his car, like there was no hole through his window into his vehicle?
That is correct.
When you are the first officer on scene, did it become clear to you when you went up to the Tesla that he had no idea there was a bullet hole in his vehicle?
That is correct, yes.
When you were talking about Brandon's demeanor, about him having sort of no idea what happened, you're not saying that he didn't know what occurred that day, that he wasn't able to tell you what he saw and what happened as he drove up, right?
That is correct.
So was Brandon able to tell you turned onto a street and saw this Jeep?
Say that again, I'm sorry. So
was Brandon able to tell you what happened when he turned onto a street and saw the Jeep there?
Yes, he did that.
He was able to tell you about seeing that back window come up?
Correct.
And he was able to tell you about seeing the rifle barrel come out?
Yes.
He was able to tell you about the rifle barrel having what he thought was a silencer at the end.
That is correct.
And then he was able to tell you that he heard that loud bang and his window shatter.
That is correct.
And that after that, he went straight.
That, yes, that's correct.
And he was able to give you the description of the Jeep Wrangler.
Yes.
Two doors.
Yes.
That it had that Texas license plate on it.
That's correct.
The direction and location where it was parked.
Yes.
Did Brandon tell you that his car was still moving when the bullet struck his car?
I believe he did.
So the person from that back of the Jeep is firing as his vehicle is still moving?
That is correct.
When you were there, you were asked by the defendant about anyone or about Brandon or anyone going into the house or the garage. Was it your understanding that the officers, other officers that were there, cleared the house?
They were going to clear the house, yes.
You just didn't participate in that?
That's correct.
What does it mean to clear the house?
It's a possibility they were thinking there could be somebody in the house. So when they clear the house, they're actually searching room to room in the house to make sure there was no one else there.
Okay, so did Brandon give him permission to go into his house and do whatever they needed to do?
Yes, he did.
When you first drove up on the scene, you said Brandon was in the street on the phone with 911 still?
Yes.
Okay. Was he kind of looking as you came up and kind of going towards you?
I believe so.
And then as you walked up to him, did you sort of take him back onto the sidewalk?
Yes, I started explaining, you know, what's going on. And then, yeah, I had him go up on the sidewalk myself.
To kind of just had him follow you up there?
Yes.
And then you said when you started talking with him, he then hung up with 911?
That is correct.
Okay. In terms of the distance between the Jeep and the Tesla, w- Was it just a little more than the width of the driveway, basically? I'm going to put up Exhibit 7 here. So if we are talking about the Jeep is here, right?
That is correct, yes.
And this is Brandon's driveway?
Yes.
So did he explain the end of the Jeep was right on the edge of his driveway?
Yes, it was.
And so the distance between the end of the Jeep and Brandon's car would be sort of where that, from the end of his driveway to where the cone was?
That's correct. I didn't do any measurements, but just assumption, just looking at it, I'd say maybe approximately 10 feet.
Okay. And then you were not responsible for searching the distance of where Brandon told you he had driven or where he had seen the vehicle, the Jeep, go?
That is correct.
At some point during this, when detectives were there, did you finally get relieved to go do other calls?
Yes, I went back on to my routine patrol. Yes.
All right. Thank you. I have no other questions for this witness.
Are there any questions for this witness from the jury? Write down your question if you have a question. Pass it forward.
I wrote it down.
Would it be easier or harder to hit a closer target?
Actually, be if you have a sight, if you're using a scope, it's harder.
All right. Any follow-up based on that question first from the defense?
No, Your Honor.
From the state?
And would the movement of the object you're striking also play into the difficulty of hitting it?
It would be the moving of the vehicles. Also, it depends on whoever is doing the shooting with the rifle. Do they have a rest where they can shoot and everything? Meaning a rest, meaning you put your gun on a stable platform and you're able to shoot where there's no, when the recoil happens, the gun does not jump. If you're doing it freehand, then a lot of times the gun will kind of go up the recoil and your gun would kind of go in an upward direction.
So if a person is shooting a moving target using a gun that doesn't have a stable platform, the recoil of the rifle could also impact the ability to hit the target.
That is correct. If they're aiming here, a lot of times without the rest, it might just kind of go up just a hair and miss its actual target.
Another question, Your Honor.
All right, you can step down. We're going to take our afternoon recess for about 15 minutes. Please remember the admonition.
All rise for the jury.
Just go up there, you got to call me again.
Yeah, why don't you come back up?
I find my notes. Where was I?
All right, for the jury.
All right, thank you. The jury is now present. The parties are present. We'll resume the direct examination that was started with this witness, Mr. Pillar, Detective Pillar, on, I always say your name wrong, Pillar. I have a mental block that was started on Friday afternoon. So go ahead.
Thank you. All right. So last Friday when we broke, we had discussed how you have previously been responsible for collecting gunshot residue or GSR, correct?
Correct.
And that you had been taught and trained how to do that.
Correct.
And we talked about how you also have been responsible to collect or attempt to collect DNA or biological material using swabs.
That's correct.
And you were taught and trained how to do that.
Yes.
And I think we also talked about how you have been taught and trained how to collect fingerprints and have done that as well.
Correct.
So next I wanted to talk to you about how you package these items of evidence, and let's start, for instance, with a GSR kit. After you have collected it the way you advised us, how would you package that to ensure its integrity?
So just as a refresher, GSR kit are individual tube-like collection kits, about again the size of a shotgun shell. Once you use the adhesive to collect the areas where you believe GSR exists, you put the adhesive side within that tube again, facing inwards, twist it and seal it, and then you would use something called an integrity seal, which is a fancy name for a sticker that you put on there to provide the location, your initials, and the date of collection.
And is that put in any type of bag then and sealed?
Yes, once the GSR is collected, then it is then sealed in a vacuum sealed type bag.
So the package themselves have a sticker around it that tells you where it's collected from?
Yes.
And then those little vials are put into a plastic bag that itself is also sealed?
Correct.
So when the person who is performing any analysis on it receives it, that should all be sealed?
Correct.
And if those seals were broken, they would know that someone else had been in it?
Correct.
You had talked to us about the DNA collection, the Q-tips on the longer sticks, so to speak, being put into boxes.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us how those are packaged and sealed to ensure the integrity?
So the collection Q-tips, as I'll refer to them as again, they go the dry collection and the wet collection of the same area that was swabbed get put into a small cardboard box, a very small cardboard box that actually has a breathable hole. That is sealed, but then that collection then gets placed into a paper envelope, which is then also sealed with an integrity seal, and the location, initials, and date are put on that envelope. And let me back up, I apologize, the box that the item is the Q-tips are placed in, that's also notated with the report number and the location of collection prior to it then going into the envelope, which again has all the additional information and integrity seal.
So again, for the DNA swabs, if someone testified that the seals were all intact, then that would indicate no one else had been in there since that was done.
Correct.
Are those items, so for like the GSR, the tape put around the vial, is that done at the scene right after that is collected?
Yes. Immediately upon collection, you seal the item that you collected, and then again, then you're going to take off that second pair of gloves that I explained on Friday, and then you put on a fresh pair of gloves before proceeding to the next collection location.
Now, in this case, we're talking about collecting this evidence in another state, in Rexburg, Idaho. Were all of these items that were collected as you processed the Jeep packaged, for instance, for the GSR, into their vials with the tape on it, and then those vials put into plastic bags and sealed there in Rexburg?
The vials were placed into the plastic bags and sealed, as well as the DNA kits, and then those are all collected, but they are not administratively impounded yet because we have not returned to our property and evidence building.
So the integrity seals are put on in Rexburg, Idaho, though?
Correct.
Now, we talked about impounding. For the police department, for the Gilbert Police Department, does each item of evidence have its own unique identification number?
Every item that goes into our property evidence building gets its own unique number with the associated report number.
Is that something that you guys make up, or is it just automatically created when you are actually impounding the evidence?
It is created when you are impounding the evidence through our report management system. So essentially entering the information into the computer, it assigns a number and ultimately an identifying barcode that goes with it.
So we had heard, for instance, about swabs that were sent to Mesa Police Department or a blood blot that was sent there and some numbers were read off. Those are just numbers generated as part of your impound process?
Correct.
But the protection and the integrity is what you or your crime scene specialist are doing at the scene itself?
Correct.
Okay. So I want to talk to you about November 18th of 2019. Did you go to Rexburg, Idaho to process a 2018 Jeep Wrangler with license plate or a Texas license plate LWD0997?
Yes.
Were you working with the crime scene specialist, Tammy Leshick?
I was.
We also have heard from Tom Olzak. Did he go up with you as well?
He was up there with us as well, yes.
When you got to Rexburg, I think you had testified previously, albeit I'm not sure at this point, that the Jeep was inside, impounded in an inside facility?
Yes, as a refresher, Rexburg Police Department impounded, located and impounded the Jeep Wrangler with a Texas license plate on November 6th. And we arrived, myself, crime scene specialist Leshick, and Detective Olzak arrived to Rexburg, Idaho to process the Jeep on November 18th.
And was it impounded the 4th or the 6th? November 4th?
I'm sorry, 4th? The 4th. Okay. And that Jeep was taken to a private evidence building for the Rexburg Police Department. So it was a secure facility where that Jeep was located.
When you went there, was there a Rexburg officer at the time, a Detective Ray Armacio, with you to execute that search warrant?
Yes.
Did the Jeep itself have, I'll call it, integrity tape on the doors?
Yes, all the doors had integrity stickers on them as well on the Jeep to just show that it had not actually been physically accessed since it was impounded.
Your Honor, the state has shown the defendant exhibits 48 through 68. If I can have my paralegal approach with those. Do you recognize those as photographs that were taken on November 18th in Rexburg, Idaho, while you were processing both the inside and outside of the 2018 Jeep Wrangler with the Texas license plates LWD 0997?
Yes.
And is that, those are photographs of the Jeep that the Chandler Police Department had also provided you photographs with from July 11th, 2019?
Correct.
And that's a Jeep that was associated to Lori Vallo?
Correct.
State will move to admit 48 through 68.
Any objection?
No objection.
48 through 68 are admitted.
So when we see Exhibit 48, is this sort of a beginning photo to let us know, again, the sort of case number that we would see on the items of evidence that would were impounded with this case, as well as to document when this process began?
Correct.
What do we see here?
That's a picture of the Jeep that was impounded at the Rexburg Police Department's impound building. If you notice on the door, around the door frame here, these red stickers, and I believe there's closer-up pictures, but those are evidence seals. So again, you can't access that vehicle without damaging those seals.
Okay. Exhibit 50, does that again show some of those seals?
Yes, the integrity seals.
We had also heard and seen a photo from Dan Moss. Did this vehicle have a sticker here in this corner?
Yes.
Was that associated to Texas?
Yes, it is. It was.
51, is that sort of showing a closer up of those seals that the vehicle was still in that same shape from when it was impounded?
Yes, they're showing that all doors have been sealed.
Exhibit 52, can we see on this the tinting on this vehicle?
Yes.
Were you able to see into the vehicle?
No, not without actually getting up close with a flashlight.
With a flashlight?
Yes.
Exhibit 53, closer up of the seals and the tinting on that window?
Very dark.
Now, at the time when this Jeep was impounded, was the rear tire on it?
When it was impounded, when it was located by Rexburg Police and then impounded, it was impounded as you see here, and it did have a wheel affixed to the back of the Wrangler.
Okay. Exhibit 55, showing that rear window and the tire and the seals there?
Yes.
And then again, showing the seals in 56. 57, is that sort of a whited out, and 58, a photo of the license plate?
Yes.
So that's the license plate that, again, was associated to Lori Vallo's Jeep Wrangler.
Correct.
Now, in Exhibit 60, are we seeing sort of how the rear window here that was described by Brandon as going up is able to move upward?
Yes, and if you look in the same picture towards the bottom left, you'll notice that the door actually has to be open because the door is what actually has the wheel affixed to it. If that wheel is not there, that window can be open without bumping into the wheel.
Okay, so in order to open the window, you guys had to actually open up the bottom, I'll call it for lack of a better word, door here.
Correct.
Tailgate.
Yes, correct.
Okay. Now, when you were processing this vehicle, did you talk with Ms. Leshick about where you would like to collect the gunshot residue from?
Yes.
And when you were discussing where to collect it from, was this based upon what Brandon Boudreau had explained occurred on October 2nd?
Yes.
So your understanding was the shooter was inside the rear of the vehicle and the rifle was pointing out this back tailgate window area?
Correct. That back window opened up partially and was fired from within that cab inside that Jeep Wrangler.
So based upon that, where did you want to collect the gunshot residue from?
I described to Ms. Lashik what I was looking for, and I wanted to focus primarily for the GSR collection to be in the back cab of that Jeep Wrangler where GSR might be present, so around the back window and the back frame of the interior of that Jeep.
Were you looking to both rear and driver's side windows as
yes.
one of the locations? Were you looking to both the passenger and driver's side front seats?
Yes.
Were you looking to the hard top of that Jeep?
Yes.
And then the rear window, meaning this rear window?
Yes, and as I believe I explained on Friday, it's an explosion of gas and particles. So anywhere within that area that was just identified, we were checking all those areas for GSR, gunshot residue.
When you were processing this Jeep on November 18th for GSR, at that time, did you know anything about whether or not the rear seat of this vehicle had been removed prior to the shooting?
I had no knowledge of the status of the back seat, no.
I'm going to put up 63 so we know what we're talking about. When this Jeep was impounded and you guys processed it, was the seat like this at that time?
Yes.
So when you're processing this Jeep on November 18th, you are unaware that this may have been removed at the time of the October 2nd shooting?
Correct.
Okay. When you were processing this Jeep on November 18th, were you aware that the rear tire had been removed?
Yes.
Was that based upon your interview with Brandon Boudreaux?
Yes.
Okay. And does that also make sense given what you understand of how you could possibly open that rear window with or without the tire on there?
Yes. And at this juncture, we also had the diesel license plate reader image that was presented earlier of the Jeep without a tire on the back.
All right, so when you're processing this on November 18th, you have what Brandon Boudreaux told you, that there was no tire on the back and the rear window opened, as well as that license plate reader from the DEA showing this Jeep with this license plate on the I-40 without the rear tire.
Correct, 26 hours prior to the shooting.
Okay. So when we put Exhibit 61 up here, was GSR taken from the back of this driver's seat?
Yes.
Was GSR taken from the window over here?
Yes.
Was GSR taken from the roof up here?
Yes.
Putting up 62, is this the passenger side?
Yes.
And again, was GSR taken from the back of this passenger seat?
Yes.
Was GSR taken from this passenger side rear window?
Yes.
And from this headrest or rooftop there?
Correct, yes.
While this was, let me ask you this. Who actually took those little vials with the sticky tabs and pressed it against the rear seat or the window?
Crime scene Lashik was the one who actually physically collected that GSR.
Were you off sitting in a corner eating a cheeseburger, or were you watching?
I was with her throughout the duration of the evidence collection of the Jeep.
Were you not only watching, but helping to ensure that she's collecting from the areas that you want collected?
That's correct. Giving some instruction of what I'm wanting to collect. She's the one physically doing it, but I'm helping give instruction and guide for where and why.
So for instance, after Ms. Lashik would collect GSR or potential GSR from the back of, say, the passenger seat, did you observe her as she then closed up the vial and put the tape on that and documented where that came from?
I observed her package, the collection, yes.
Did you also talk with crime scene specialist Lashik about where you wanted to attempt to collect biological material or DNA from the vehicle?
Yes.
And in that circumstance, where did you want to try to collect biological material or DNA from?
DNA, you want some vigorous, connection. So the primary areas that were identified is going to be the steering wheel, the door handles to exit and enter the vehicle, the gear shift, and then the seatbelt buckles. And that was for both the driver's side and passenger side, because at this juncture, again, we don't know how many people we had involved. We had some ideas, but we didn't have a confirmation of how many people.
Okay. Based upon the fact that you had that LPR read and Brandon saying that the rear tire was gone, did you also want to try to collect DNA from the lug nuts where the spare tire would go onto?
Yes, that was an additional location on the exterior of the vehicle, so where the back wheel was located.
Did you watch as crime specialist Tammy Leschick swabbed each of these areas that we've discussed?
Yes, I watched her swab, take the DNA swabs.
Did she follow the same process that you have explained of first putting on the gloves, the second pair?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a yes?
Yes, I'm sorry, yes. She changed her gloves according to our practices.
Did you see her put the distilled water onto one of the Q-tips and, for instance, use that on the steering wheel?
Yes.
Did you see her then take the dry one and swab over the steering wheel with the dry swab?
Yes.
Did you see her put those into the box?
Yes.
And did you see her then seal and document each box after that collection?
Yes.
Did you also watch Ms. Leschick process the Jeep for prints?
Yes.
And did she do the same method that you had described last Friday of trying to dust these different areas to look for the presence of any type of latent prints?
Yes.
Were any prints recovered from the Jeep?
No fingerprints, viable fingerprints were located within the Jeep, and that can be dependent on material, the structure of what it is, if it's bumpy, if it's smooth, but there was nothing that was located where we were searching as far as viable fingerprints. But we did have the DNA and GSR at that point.
And for the fingerprints, were you looking in the driver's side interior windows?
Yes.
The vanity mirrors that are on the sunscreen?
Yes.
The sort of pillar that's along the door frame there?
Yes.
Rear view mirror?
Yes.
And the same for the passenger side?
Yes.
And then also that rear hatch window that had been pushed up?
Yes.
And so those areas were processed and nothing of significance or of that either you or Ms. Leschick felt was a latent print was recovered?
Nothing that was usable, correct.
Okay. We heard from Mr. Olczak that he was there. Did he remove the infotainment system before or after you did all these processing?
Removing of the infotainment system was the final thing to be removed or processed, if you will, from the Jeep Wrangler.
Okay. With each of these items that were collected, each gunshot residue kit, each swab that was taken, were all of those items sealed with integrity tape as each were collected there in Rexburg, Idaho, in that impound place?
Yes.
Now, you told us you went to Rexburg that day. Did you also, in the vehicle, note any documentation indicating inside the vehicle sort of the ownership of the vehicle?
Yes, the vehicle's registration.
And was that to a Charles and Lori Vallow?
Yes.
And did that match the vehicle that you were looking at there, that 2018 Jeep Wrangler?
Yes, and I'm sorry I misspoke. In this particular picture, there's the insurance card, but yes.
You told us that each item of evidence is sealed with integrity, but then provided an impound number, correct?
Yes.
And that was done back at Gilbert Police Department?
Correct.
Did you guys stay in Rexburg that night, or did you go directly back to Phoenix or Gilbert, I guess?
Fly back
to Arizona.
We traveled to Rexburg that morning and returned from Rexburg to Phoenix that morning, and that same morning we returned from Rexburg to Phoenix and ultimately to the Gilbert Police Department. So it was a one-day trip.
So we saw in the beginning that you guys began this around 10 a.m. in the morning. Do you recall approximately how long you were processing the Jeep?
I would have to estimate approximately 3 hours.
And so after that processing, you guys got back in a plane and came back to Arizona.
Correct.
Were those items of evidence then taken to the Gilbert Police Department to be impounded?
Yes.
Were there two GSR kits? Well, let me ask you this. Each gunshot residue kit, does that have three vials in the kit?
Yes.
And so are they all kept together in their own separate plastic bag?
Yes.
But each vial is individually sealed inside of there?
Correct.
And so were there six of those GSR vials used to process this Jeep?
Yes.
And then were there two, I guess, kits impounded into property?
Yes.
And were they impounded as items 645886 and 645888?
Yes and yes.
Were you present when those were impounded?
I was not.
Did you eventually send these items to be tested by, for instance, the GSR Phoenix Police Department?
Yes.
And so when you send those, are you sending the sealed item that has the integrity tape on it, as well as the report number that was written on it by Ms. Leshick in your presence?
Yes.
So the only change would be that that sealed bag now was given these numbers when it was put into your system?
Correct.
And then did you use those numbers to send those items to, for instance, Phoenix Police Department?
Yes.
Okay. Again, for each of the swabs of the Jeep, were those each impounded individually?
Yes.
So each box that's then put in a paper envelope is impounded individually and given its own individual number?
That is correct.
And then did you use those numbers so that you could send those to the Mesa Police Department so that they could be tested?
Yes.
Did you then, when you were sending those to the Mesa Police Department, again, note that each of those integrity tapes are still intact as you are sending them to another agency to be processed?
Yes.
And did you then send to the Mesa Police Department the swab for the steering wheel is 645889?
Yes.
And the swab for the passenger seat belt buckle as 645890?
Yes.
And the swab for the driver's seat belt buckle as 645891?
Yes.
And the swab for the gear shift as 645893?
Yes.
And the swab for the passenger interior door handle as 645894?
Yes.
The swab for the lug nuts of that spare tire is 645895?
Yes.
The swab for the driver's side interior door handle is 645896?
Yes.
We've also heard today about a blood blot, a sample of blood from Alexander Cox. Were you present when that was obtained on December 14th of 2019?
I was present for that, yes.
And was that obtained for a DNA comparison to those swabs that were taken from the 2018 Jeep Wrangler that we've been discussing?
It was.
Is that also impounded with into a packaging that has integrity seal on it as well?
Yes.
And was that then impounded with a property ID 647961?
Yes.
And is that the item that we heard this morning from Emmy Lynn Sapinoso that was sent to her for testing?
Yes.
As the case agent for this investigation, you told us that you have sent off those items for testing. That was part of your job, correct?
Yes.
Were you also responsible for writing search warrants to obtain cell phone records?
Yes.
When you are writing a search warrant to obtain cell phone records, is this a search warrant sent to a court to basically order these companies to send you records within those certain date ranges and items that they're to send you?
Yes, you complete an affidavit explaining your reasoning to request the warrant, send it to Superior Court for a judge to review, and if approved, that warrant will be signed, and then we will then serve, in this example here, to a phone company.
On December 4th of 2019, did you write a search warrant to Verizon for cell phone numbers 808-7-45?
Yes.
480-489-2?
Yes.
480-3?
Yes.
And 480-6?
Yes.
So. And is TracFone, I guess, one of the subsidiaries of Verizon?
Yes.
Do most of these phone companies, T-Mobile, AT&T, Verizon, have sort of subsidiary type of companies that are underneath them, I guess?
Yes, a company example being Verizon would be the umbrella company for some of these smaller organizations that sell and assign phones.
During your investigation, both by speaking with Chandler Police Department and looking into numbers that have been given out, did you associate the number 808-755 and 480-489-4652 as cell phone numbers associated to Lori Vallow?
Yes.
I can have my both of them.
There's more live courtroom coverage coming up. Press subscribe now so you don't miss a second from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by outsourcing around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. So when you buy from American Giant, you're taking a stand for hardworking people, local communities, and quality clothes. American Giant directly supports American manufacturers and ensures you aren't footing that tariff bill. Support American-made, tariff-free clothing with American Giant with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting radio-exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.